Welcome back to Random Trek, the show where I, your host, Scott McNulty, watch a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My guest for this episode is Jackie Chang. Thank you for being here, Jackie.
Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. So tell us a little bit about yourself. How would the people in internet land know you?
Well, I guess that's a good question. Right now, I am the editor-in-chief of The Wirecutter and The Sweet Home, which is, as you probably know, a technology... Well, Wirecutter is a technology site that kind of tries to ease the anxiety of buying tech for kind of, you know, I would say the general, you know, audience is the general audience. But, you know, we have a lot of nerdy, geeky people who follow us too, which we love. And Sweet Home is the kind of home version of that, you know, for kitchen and garden and garage and all that kind of stuff. And previous to Wirecutter, I was a senior editor at Ars Technica. So I would guess that's probably where most people know me from.
Probably. And an unsolicited praise. I do enjoy the Wirecutter, and I am one of those geeky people that uses it and frequently visits.
Oh, I'm so glad.
Need to buy things. Because I don't want to buy the wrong thing, and I know you guys spend crazy amounts of time researching all kinds of random things. So kudos to you and your whole team.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Welcome.
This episode is not sponsored by the Wirecutter, but you should check it out anyway.
Yes, please. Please check it out.
So, Jackie, Star Trek. Let's talk about some Star Trek here.
Let's do it.
How did you first get into Star Trek? I know you're a fan, so tell me a little bit about your Star Trek journey.
Yeah, well, my journey. That, you know, it really is a journey. I would say that I've spent most of my life kind of passively watching a lot of Star Trek episodes. You know, I would say up until I was like around 20 or so, my dad is a huge Star Trek fan, and he, you know, one of the weird things about that whole background, which I won't go into in detail, but, you know, my dad is an immigrant to the United States. And so when he first came here, he had kind of limited English. And so Star Trek for him was one of these shows that he watched regularly, like as a kid, when he first came here to like learn English. Oh. So that's one of the kind of oddball things. And so he has this kind of deep love for Star Trek for that reason. And then I kind of picked it up from him a little bit. But I never watched them in like a chronological way, I would say. I kind of just watched them when they were on TV. You know, I found them to be entertaining and funny, but I didn't like follow the storylines a lot when I was younger. And then when I went to college, I met my now husband, Clint Ecker, and he's a huge Star Trek fan, and he, you know, does follow all those storylines. And so, you know, when I met him, he of course owns like every DVD set of every, Star Trek show ever created. Which now, you know, like almost 15 years later, all those are taking up a huge amount of space on our bookshelves. We still have them.
You have to upgrade to Blu-rays.
Yes, right? Well, he kind of started talking about that, and then I was like, by the way, we don't have a Blu-ray player. So I would say that I've spent the last 15 years really kind of crafting like my knowledge of the whole storyline and arc of Star Trek.
So with that said, let's talk about, I'm asking everybody who is on this podcast, what their favorite series is of Star Trek.
So, I mentioned this when we were kind of talking before the podcast, but I have a couple of favorite series. I loved Next Generation just because, you know, it's one of those series that, even though it's not technically the first series of Star Trek, it's the first series that was kind of widely popular. And there's a reason for that. I mean, it really appeals to so many different kinds of people. It has so many interesting and funny characters. Just overall, Next Generation is just one of those great ones. But that said, I have the very controversial opinion that Voyager is one of the best series.
This is the second time that this has been declared on this podcast.
Yeah, and you know, I know everyone hates Voyager almost as much as everyone hates Enterprise, I would say.
I think, yeah, almost. I still think more people hate Enterprise than they do
Me
Voyager.
Me too. From talking to people, I think more people hate Enterprise as well. you know, but people hate Voyager, and, you know, there are some ways in which I can see why, but there are a lot of other ways in which I can't see why. I spend a lot of time thinking about this, and that probably sounds sarcastic, but it's not. I actually do think about this a lot.
It doesn't sound sarcastic on a podcast named Random Trek, by the way.
I guess I just feel like people don't like it because they don't like Janeway as a captain, and part of that is, you know, I think it's partially because people don't like women captains, and she's really the first one in Star Trek as a series, so it's kind of one of those like weird jarring things where you're just like, oh my god, who's this person, and she's horrible. But let's be honest, I mean, all captains are horrible on some level or another. That's the whole point. They have some fatal flaw, you know. But I like it overall because it kind of takes a little bit of a different view to the whole thing, you know, whereas Next Generation and, you know, I would say most of all the other series kind of have like a home base. Voyager has this unique twist where they're kind of lost, and so they never know what's going on, and they don't really know where they are, and they never know if they're going to get home. And so, like, I guess I kind of like that level of uncertainty.
Sadly for you, Jackie, we are not talking about an episode of Voyager today.
But we are talking about Next Generation, which is also a favorite. So.
See? So you don't lose.
Yes.
And we are talking about, in particular, the episode titled Remember Me from Season 4. So we start off with the Enterprise is stopping at Starbase 133, apparently, the internet tells me, for crew rotation, I guess. I don't even know what that is. And Dr. Crusher is excited because one of her good old pals, Dr. Dalen Quance, is it Quance?
Well, they said it as Quace on the episode.
Yes.
Yeah, I wasn't sure about how to say it either.
Well, he's old, his wife is dead, and now he's leaving the Starbase because he is sad and lonely, and he's ready to retire or just go back to Starfleet Medical. It was unclear to me if he was retiring or not.
I got the impression he was retiring.
Yes, with his one little bag.
Yeah.
Taking his stuff and going home. And apparently he was Dr. Crusher's mentor, may still be. And she was like an assistant of his or something. They have a 15-year relationship, so they're good friends, is my point. And Dr. Crusher and he bond over being widows, because, of course, Dr. Crusher's husband is dead. Thanks, Jean-Luc Picard.
Thanks.
Duh. And he talks, it's really kind of a depressing opening.
Yeah.
He talks about he's getting old and everybody he knows is dead.
Yeah, and how depressed he is because his wife.
Yes.
Blah,
everything
blah, blah.
Reminds him of her, so he has to leave the Starbase, even though he loved working there. And it's very sad. But he basically, they talk about how it's important to remember people. Ooh, it's foreshadowing. Don't forget people that you love. And then we cut to engineering, where we find that, for some reason,
Wes is around with the warp core.
He is, which seems to be... Here's my problem with this. I have two problems with this.
There's many problems.
Yes.
Go ahead.
One, he's an ensign, right? So he has no... Why are they letting him fiddle around with, like, this super dangerous thing? First
you know, just for fun, just because.
He has some theories, so why not actually do it with the actual ship? My other problem, let's just assume, okay, fine. This is standard operating procedure on Starfleet vessels. Ensigns can just come into engineering and fiddle around with settings all they want. But they are also inside a starbase when he is doing this.
Right, not dangerous at all.
No, like, it should be fine,
completely normal.
I think. It's just very weird.
I cannot, you know, I was thinking this, you know, the whole time when I was preparing for this show and everything, I was researching the episode again, just, to, you know, again, to be fresh about it. And then I watched it the whole time. That's all I can think of is like, why are they allowing this to happen in the first place? I mean, geez. Like, there's no excuse. There really isn't. It's
I
like
can't
saying,
think of any.
It's like being like, oh yeah, the intern can totally like mess around with like this nuclear weapon. I mean, why not?
It's cool. He's read an article.
You almost can't even like make up a backstory excuse for it. Like, there's just nothing.
No, I mean, that's many episodes I have spinned yarns as to why I think something is happening, even though they never really explain it.
Right.
Like, I can't think of any reason why they wouldn't just put him in the holodeck to simulate this.
You know, even if they were playing favorites and they were like, okay, sure, you can do this. Don't tell anyone. I mean, still, why would they let him do it? I mean, it just doesn't make sense.
But it has to happen this way because as he's fiddling around, Dr. Crusher stops by to, I guess, stare at her son working, kind of weird. Mm-hmm. And he acknowledges her kind of in the way that teenagers do, that kind of, oh, mom, why are you here? And so he does his little warp bubble thing. There's a flash, and he thinks, well, that's weird. That shouldn't have happened.
Whatever.
But I'm sure it's fine. And then he looks up, and his mom's gone. And then he's like, eh, whatever. I have other things to do. And then Geordi is like, what the hell happened? And he says, I don't know. But then he leaves engineering, and he runs into his mother. So he's like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Everything's fine. And then they leave. Oh, actually, no. They leave Starbase. And I guess it's the next day, because Dr. Crusher is supposed to meet her friend for breakfast.
Yes.
So she goes to his quarters, presses the little doorbell several times.
Is mysteriously not there.
He's gone. And not only is he gone, all his stuff is gone.
Yes.
So either someone has kidnapped him and stole all his stuff, or something weird is afoot.
Or he just had, like, a total meltdown and just decided to, like, ghost out.
That's true. He was depressed. He could have killed himself by beaming himself into space.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I was not going to go there, but I appreciate that as an option.
It's always an option when you're on a spaceship. You get depressed, you can always just throw yourself out in an airlock.
I mean, you know what? It's funny because they almost set it up like he could have. So, yeah, I guess that is an option. He might have killed himself.
Spoiler alert, he didn't kill himself. But it probably would have been a more interesting episode had he killed himself. It certainly probably would be the most controversial Next Generation episode. Featuring an elderly man killing himself. But that's not really Star Trek-y, so that doesn't happen. And so that's the opener. Mm-hmm. We set up this big mystery. And then, so Beverly does what one would do when your friend is missing on the Enterprise. She calls Worf. Well, actually, first she says, computer, locate Dr. What's his name?
And the computer says, Quaice.
Dr. Quaice, there you go. Computer says, there's no Dr. Quaice on the Enterprise. And I only mention this because Worf comes in, she explains that he's missing, and the first thing Worf does is ask the computer where Dr. Quaice is, which is basically the equivalent of, like, tech support saying, have you tried rebooting?
Yeah. But you can't blame him. You know, he's a security officer. It's like, true. What are you supposed to do?
He has his operating procedures that he follows.
Yeah. But, you know, my favorite part about that point in this episode is that Worf, well, then he's like, oh, I wasn't informed about Dr. Quaice even coming. And then she's like, oh, I thought the captain's supposed to let you know, when I file the paperwork. And he's like, yeah. And then he's just like, oh, well, moving on. You know, no one's asking, like, what happened here with this apparent communication gap. And he's just like, well, I guess I'll just help you out anyway.
It's true.
Which is, I mean, it's totally cool of him as, like, a friend and you know, coworker. But, like, I always thought it was funny because, you know, in the rest of the series, you know, Worf, as you know, as I'm sure everyone knows, he's kind of a grumpy guy.
Yes.
Like, he's not really one to just throw these things, like, you know, ignore weird inconsistencies like this. Like, usually, I think, his character would be like, well, what the hell happened? Like, why, you know, why do you think this person should be here and he's apparently not here? But no, Worf is like, whatever, I'll help you figure it out.
Yeah,
no,
let's
problem.
Do a deck-by-deck search. I'm sure we'll find him.
And yeah.
Bev at one point mentions, oh, yeah, if he's dead, he won't come up on the sensors, so we have to actually look around.
Right, which is a good observation, I think.
That is good, because at first I thought, well, why don't they just use internal sensors? And then, being a doctor, she gives a good reason why they wouldn't just do it. But I do agree, Worf's reaction is kind of weird. He goes from slightly puzzled as to why he was not informed to, okay, let's go check it out.
Yeah, he's like, let's go for it. Let's find this guy.
We'll find him. We'll track him down.
Yeah.
And then so she goes to... Dr. Crusher goes to good old Jean-Luc in his ready room and explains what's happening. And he's like, okay, well, I guess we should look for him because, you know, Jean-Luc and Beverly have a relationship that goes on for a long time. Mm-hmm. He did kill her husband. or ordered
details.
His husband. You know, but, you know, they got over that. And he, I think, Worf and Data there, so they go off to look for this mysterious doctor that's missing.
Mm-hmm.
And Beverly is leaving to join the search, one assumes. And Picard pulls her aside and says, Are you aware of the regulations for having guests aboard the Enterprise? And she's like, yeah.
She's like, I filed all the damn paperwork with you weeks ago.
Weeks ago.
Yeah, and he's like, huh, what? And then at this point, I think that's when they start kind of slowly revealing that, like, something weird is amiss, besides the fact that this guy is missing.
Right. He's not just ordinary missing. Yeah. He's, like, totally missing.
And it's weird, because Picard doesn't know what's going on, Worf doesn't know what's going on. No. But, yeah. The part that I like about this turning point is that despite no one having any idea what's happening, or apparently having any idea, Picard is totally on board with Dr. Crusher. Like, he is willing to help her out even despite this whole situation being, like, totally inconsistent and strange.
It is a very strange. I noted that as well. He's on board. He's like, okay, your word is good enough. We will find your friend.
Yeah.
Even though you never filed your paperwork. Maybe. And he does what I do when I'm watching Star Trek, and he comes up with these theories. He's like, well, maybe you filed the paperwork, but it was intercepted.
Right.
And somebody else gave you the approval because it's some kind of plot to kill your friend because he probably has enemies on the starbase.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably what's happening.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. It's like, in that situation, what else are you going to do? Like, you're going to come up with some theories or something. I don't know.
That's right. Then you hopefully find his corpse.
Yeah.
Because at this point, I think everyone agrees he's probably dead.
Probably. But then he points out, I think, then he's like, well, why is this dude's luggage and all, you know, his stuff missing? And then you're just like, oh, right, all his stuff is missing. Like, you know, maybe he did take off somewhere.
Maybe he took a shuttlecraft and he's gone, man.
Mm-hmm.
And so the doctor says, well, I met him at the transporter room. So they go down to talk to Miles O'Brien, and Miles, who has a very small role in this episode, but it's always nice to see Miles.
Yes.
Basically says, psh, I didn't transport anybody.
Yeah.
With that description. And Beverly is like, what? I was here. We talked. And Miles says, well, you did come in. I remember you coming in.
Mm-hmm.
You looked around confused a little bit. I said, is there anything I can do to help you? You said thanks, and you left.
Yep.
Very strange.
And then she's like, that didn't happen. But, like, I don't know. She kind of spent a little bit of time arguing with him about it. But I think at this point, she's just like, whatever.
And then she tries to get in contact with some of her subordinate doctors. They don't respond to their their hails, I suppose. And so she asks the computer where these two doctors are, and the computer says that neither of those doctors have ever been on the Enterprise, at which point Miles gives her this kind of smirk. And he's thinking, you're crazy.
Yeah. I don't even know, like, how to begin. Actually, I have a whole observation about this whole episode, but that's kind of, like, where it starts, which is, I guess I'll just say it now. I feel like this whole episode, this is the turning point that I think kind of begins to lead into this train of thought, is it's not overtly, like, gaslighting, but it basically the whole episode is, like, gaslighting, you know, Beverly. You know, the whole time, now she's beginning to think, well, is it me? Am I insane? Like, mm-hmm. am I just making up and everyone thinks I'm crazy? And that's why I think it sort of begins at this point, because the smirk is, like, right when you're just like, okay, now the crew is beginning to think she's, like, nuts and she doesn't know what's going on.
Well, like, and you can understand, because one person missing, okay. Two people, and one person they don't even know, but now two people who she thinks were on the crew who were, in fact, on the crew. But everybody else has no idea, has no knowledge of these people ever existing.
Right.
So it does strike people as a little crazy.
Right. But that's, yeah. Okay, let's continue.
All right, so she goes to... Now she's worried, like you said, that she is crazy.
Right.
So she goes to the bridge to tell everybody that her staff is missing.
Mm-hmm.
And Data says, that's not unusual, you don't have a staff. To which she's like, what you talking about, Data?
Yeah.
I, as sole doctor for a ship with a crew of over 1,000 people, does that make any sense, Data? To which Data responds, the crew is only 230 people. And she doesn't know what to do with that, because that's a shocking bit of news, because now, like, 800 people are missing.
Yes.
Not just her suicidal friend, who I've now decided is suicidal. I don't know if he is or not, but...
I think it's a good premise.
I think so. And so Picard kind of says, all right, Beverly, let's talk in private.
Yeah.
Away from all these other people. And he basically says, have you considered talking to Counselor Troy?
Yeah.
Because you might be crazy.
And, you know, again, like, I don't, I guess I just don't like this setup because it makes her, it just sets it up like the whole time everyone's wondering if she's nuts. But, you know, that said, I thought at that moment that was a good suggestion. I was like, you know, Counselor Troy, she can relate to people. Like, maybe she can help figure out, like, what's happening.
And I thought, I didn't like the scene at first because it was like, oh, Picard just thinks she's crazy.
Right.
But at the end of it, after he suggests she seek counseling, she says, well, will you please just, can we just return to Starbase 133 and just check there to make sure that we're not missing anything? And this is the point at which he says, yes, Beverly, your word is all I need.
Yes.
We will return. And I was like, oh, okay, well, that saves this scene.
It really does. Because, again, it really solidifies that he trusts her mm-hmm. and that he, you know, is willing to take her word for it, even despite being, like, totally, you know, apparently in a different, like, world plane or something, you know? Like, even though everything that she says seems to make no sense, like, he still is taking her word for this. So I think that is really nice and heartwarming.
Yes. And it isn't like, you are super crazy and we are not going back to that service. Go talk to Counselor Troy now.
Yeah.
In fact, I'll beam you to her quarters.
Exactly.
So she goes back to sickbay to do some work to one imagines, rest her frazzled nerves in her day-to-day activities because it's an unsettling situation that she's found herself in. Mm-hmm. But sadly, for her at least, her respute, sickbay, is now home to this giant weird space vortex.
Oh, yeah.
That's trying to suck her in.
So I kind of don't even really, you know, even though I just watched this episode like 2 days ago, I'm still not totally clear about why the space vortex like opened randomly at that time. It just kind of was there.
It was, yeah, they don't explain why. And in fact, later they explain that the space vortex can only open up in engineering.
Yeah, right.
So who knows why it's in sickbay. Other than she has no real need to go to engineering at that point, so they needed to put it where she was.
I guess. And they also needed to, like, introduce it. But they, I mean, in typical Star Trek fashion, they don't really introduce it. They kind of just, like, show it to you, and then you're like, oh, that's weird, and then...
I hope she doesn't get sucked into that.
Yeah.
And she does almost get sucked into it, but then it closes and she falls to the ground.
Right.
And she's like, what the hell, man? that is exactly a line from this episode. She, look it up. She then goes to, Captain Picard has a senior officer's meeting with Beverly and the rest of the folks, and she explains what happens with the rift, and they are perplexed, and they say, Beverly says, well, why don't we just have Worf look into what's happening and run some internal sensor sweeps?
Right.
And Captain Picard says,
Who?
And then you're like, what?
What you talking about, Willis? Yeah.
There's no Worf.
Yeah. That's like the best. Everyone's just like, dun, dun, dun. There's no Worf.
There's a Worf. Now it's getting real, man.
Yeah. Now there's like a key character that's missing.
Don't take Worf away from us.
Yeah.
And now Beverly is really concerned because she was okay. First, her friend of 15 years is gone, and her mentor. That's, you know, troubling. Then there are 800 people missing, random crew members. Well, less work for me.
They don't have names. Doesn't matter.
Who cares? But now that Worf is gone.
Yeah. It's a big deal.
It is a big deal. So she says, uh-oh, if Worf is gone, that means Wesley might be gone. So she runs to engineering. And this is another weird... I don't know why she just doesn't say... Computer, locate Wesley Crusher, because they've done that like 4 times in this episode already. She doesn't. She runs to engineering and yells for Wesley.
And he is obviously not there.
He's not there. And she is very upset. And so she goes to run somewhere else. But then she runs into Wesley, so.
Right. I totally saw that coming. I was like, of course he's going to be there. Then, because now, this is the key to the whole gaslighting, like, thing, which is now they've introduced this idea that maybe he isn't there, but then he is there. So then she's like, oh, well, maybe I am just nuts and, like,
maybe
all these,
I'm nuts, yeah.
You know,
and
whatever.
Wesley is clearly doesn't believe her and thinks she's nuts.
Right.
So that doesn't help her case.
He's like, whatever, Mom.
Yeah. She's like, it must be something to do with your experiment. And he's like, well, it's right here, Mom. Why don't you fiddle with the warp bubble?
Yeah.
You're the worst.
Exactly.
He's not very personable in this episode.
No. He's kind of a little... But,
yeah,
you know.
He is. In many of the episodes. and so she says, oh, okay, Wesley, have you tried any experts? Because, you know, I think your experiment has something to do with what's going on. And he said, well, I talked to the dude on subspace, and he had no ideas. But there was that weird alien, the Traveler, who knows much about warp bubbles. Perhaps we can talk to him. And the Traveler has appeared previously, and he does wacky things with warp bubbles, is his basic thing.
Is like his shtick.
Yes. Yeah. And, spoiler alert, in a future episode, he takes Wesley away to become his apprentice traveler.
Oh, yeah, he does.
Yes. Because I guess people got sick of Wesley, so they're like, all right, get out.
Get him out of here.
There you go. And so with that knowledge, she says, okay, great. Well, at least we have a plan. So let's have a little conversation as we walk out of engineering. What do you think, Wesley? Wesley!
Yeah.
He's missing. He's
then
gone.
He disappears.
Then he disappears. And then she's like, oh, Lord.
Oh, God. Yeah.
To the bridge. So she goes to the bridge. And in a very kind of creepy scene, I thought, like the angle that they set up, she goes into the bridge and the only person on the bridge is Captain Picard. And he seems quite perplexed by what's happening. And basically he says, you know, Beverly, I've given you the benefit of the doubt, but this is getting to be a bit much. You know, it's only ever been you and me on the Enterprise.
God.
We've never needed a crew. Why we have this gigantic ship, I don't know. But it makes perfect sense, doesn't it?
Doesn't it,
Beverly?
I've probably said this about, like, three other scenes already, but this is one of my favorite scenes because it's hilarious because, like, everything makes perfect sense to him. He's like, well, obviously, it's just us. And she's like, hello? Why are there, like, all these empty decks? And he's all like, I don't know. You know, I never thought of it that way.
That, you make a good point, but...
Yeah. It's a little bit weird, but I kind of like it, I guess, because of the back and forth.
I do like it. And then I really like how it ends, because she's like, okay, listen, Jean-Luc, we've known each other for a long time. Can I just have the computer constantly scan your medical signs, your life signs, so I know... that you're here.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, well, all right. And so he does it, which I thought was nice. He tells the computer audible readout of my medical stuff.
Yeah, like every hour or something.
He says continuously. Just
oh, continuous. Yes, yes.
And, so she's like, okay, well, the computer just does it. Then they have a little chat. And in the background, I thought it was a nice effect. They have the computer saying, you know, heart rate, whatever.
It's almost like a Twitter feed.
That's right. He's wearing like the wearables.
Mm-hmm.
He's got a heart sensor. He's got all kinds of stuff.
Right.
He's big into that kind of stuff. And so Beverly and he have this conversation, and Beverly says, "You know, Jean-Luc, I've always wanted to tell you something." And she looks away for a second, and I think you and I,
gone.
And he's gone.
Like, what do you expect at this point?
You're about
point?
To tell him that you loved him, and now he's gone. I assume that's what
yeah.
she's going to tell him.
I think that's the implication. That's what everyone would assume.
Yes. Either that, or I've never forgiven you for being responsible for killing my husband, and I hate your guts.
Yes, indeed.
That could be it. I don't know. He disappears, but something appears. Another one of these vortices appears. Trying to suck Beverly into it. And I read on Wikipedia that the actor Gates McFadden did all her own stunts for this episode.
Interesting.
So, go for her. But and then she found out like 2 days later that she was pregnant, so she probably thought, I probably should have done those stunts. But I'm sure it all worked out fine, so...
I'm sure it's fine.
Don't worry. And then this is where we find out that the crew of the Enterprise is safe and sound on the other side of this disturbance that they're trying to open, and that they're trying to kind of open an entrance so that Dr. Crusher can get from the she's trapped in a warp bubble spoiler back into the normal universe. And we hear Geordi and Wesley talking through the vortex, but it collapses. And Dr. Crusher, of course, not knowing what the vortex is trying not to be sucked into it, which I think is a logical reaction.
Makes sense. Yeah, you would not necessarily dive right through.
No. Unless you're her elderly friend.
Right.
And then like, maybe. I'm gone. Yes. And then so we've now find out that the crew is frantically trying to save Dr. Crusher. And everyone blames Wesley because it's his fault.
And it totally is. I mean, God.
But is it really his fault? I mean, yes, he did it. But
it is the responsibility of the senior
Captain
officers.
Picard was reading his reports. He knew that. I think it's Captain Picard's fault because someone at some point had to authorize Wesley to fiddle with the warp core.
I have to agree. I think that, you know, it was somebody on senior staff's problem. And that, by the way, is something that never quite gets resolved, like in the end.
Everybody's like, hooray, she's back.
Yeah.
Let's never speak of this again.
I know. No one's like, hey, how about not doing this again, you know? But anyway.
Well, we've skipped ahead, but that's
okay. Yeah, sorry.
So they try to figure out what's going on. Dr. Crusher tries to see what's happening. She figures out that, she basically makes the computer tell her that it makes no sense what's happening. Because she's like, oh, what is the purpose of the Enterprise, you know, to explore the universe? Do I have the skills required to complete this mission? And the computer basically gets hung up and then says, no, you don't, actually.
Yeah. And then she's like, welp.
I'm not crazy.
Yeah. I am serious. I know what's going on. Yeah.
She says, okay, I have to go to where the Traveler is. So she sets a course for the Traveler's homeworld. It'll take her 112 days. And then she says, okay, go there. And then nothing happens. So she says, computer, have you set course for whatever this planet is? The computer says, no, I haven't, because no planet such as that exists. Oh, no. The bad things are happening. And then she says, turn on the view screen, and now she sees that there's a mist, and that the Enterprise is in this sphere, this misty sphere, that's 705 meters in diameter.
Yeah, I was about to say, she finds out through the computer that, like, she asks some question that's like, what is the size of the universe? Right. Which is, by the way, a crazy question.
Her question, actually, I think, was, what is the nature of the universe?
The nature.
Which is even crazier.
Yeah. And then it's like, oh, it's, you know, whatever, and it's 705 feet. And then she's like, oh, that's not very big.
It's smaller than I thought it would be.
But I think, I mean, that's obviously exaggerated for the reason of, you know, you're supposed to be like, oh, right, there's like a thing surrounding the Enterprise that's obviously not the universe, but it's something else.
And it's collapsing.
Yeah. And it's collapsing, yes.
So she finds out that there's been some, you know, it keeps shrinking, and the Enterprise is being ripped apart, basically. Actually, not ripped apart, kind of erased. Because as it collapses, the section of the ships disappear, and, you know, the atmosphere is venting. She only has, like, 45 minutes of atmosphere left, and she is freaking out, as I would be freaking out. She's actually not freaking out. She is fairly calm and collected. I would be a mess, but Beverly Crusher is handling this very well.
She's like, whatever, I'm going to die in 45 minutes.
I did what I could.
Yeah.
And she keeps asking, but she does... She's a scientist, right? She's a doctor. So she says, all right, well, I have 45 minutes. I will just keep asking the computer questions about warp bubbles because I'm pretty sure I'm in a warp bubble. And maybe it will give me an answer.
Mm-hmm.
And so the computer apparently knows how one would escape from a pocket universe in a warp bubble. She should have asked earlier. And she deduces, okay, I probably have to go to engineering. Because that's where Wesley was screwing around with stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This is all his fault. So if I go to the scene of the crime, maybe I can jump into a vortex and go back to the Enterprise.
Right.
And so...
Makes sense, I guess.
Yeah, kind of, I guess. I don't know. As much as anything does.
Yeah.
Back on the real Enterprise, the Traveler and Wesley are trying to create a stable gateway, I guess, one would call it. Mm-hmm. And the Traveler's like spouting out a lot of Zen nonsense about looking into your feelings and trusting yourself. It's kind of, he's kind of like a Zen Jedi kind of guy. and Wesley's like, I can't do it. And the Traveler's like, I think you can.
Yeah. Wesley's like, ah, he's like having a mini freak out, you know, Traveler's like, just center your thoughts.
That's right. Just chill, man. Feel the warp bubble inside of you.
Yeah.
And so if Wesley does, in fact, feel the warp bubble inside of him, he kind of phases out just like in tune with how the Traveler is phasing out. And oh, by the way, the Traveler has the weirdest jumpsuit ever. I'm just saying. That's an aside.
I don't know that I remember it, but I believe you.
It's weird. And so they create a vortex. Beverly Crusher sees it, and she's like, here's my chance. She jumps through it. She jumps right into a wall on the other Enterprise. And I thought to myself, couldn't they have positioned the vortex a little, like, not leading right to a wall?
You know, yeah, it's kind of like setting her up a little bit here. But
it's true.
Okay.
I mean, on one hand, yes, they're saving her life. On the other hand, she looks a little foolish jumping into the wall. But I guess she will save, take embarrassment over death.
Right. At this point, why not?
Why not? Yes. She jumps through. Wesley collapses, and I think it's very funny. Wesley collapses. Jean-Luc Picard sees Wesley collapse and ignores him and runs to Beverly Crusher. Because, well, really, he got what he deserves.
Wesley.
Exactly. Yeah. And he's like, are you all right, Bev? And she is all right.
Yes. But, like, yeah. Yeah. And then I think she's like, oh, thank you. Thank you so much for saving me. And she's talking to the Traveler. Yep. And he's like, oh, it wasn't me. It was your son. And then she's just like, oh, you know, and then they embrace.
Hug. They hug it out.
Yeah.
And instead of, she should have smacked Wesley in the face.
I know.
Help you. It must kill me.
We all know moms.
It's true.
She totally would have gone up and just smacked him. I would have.
Yeah. Well, my mom certainly would have done that if I did that.
Yeah.
And I would never hear the end of it. I'd be like, Mom, why are you annoying me? And then she'd be like, do you remember the time when you trapped me in a warp bubble? Okay, Mom, fine. I'll take you to the store.
So.
Yeah, and that's the end, right? They hug. She. It ends basically with her asking the computer how many people are on the Enterprise.
Yes.
And she gets the right number, and everybody's happy.
And it turns out, I mean, actually, even though I think it's a little campy, I think it's, they tied that together well with the end, with the number of crew, because then she's like, oh, that's like the metric for things being normal, apparently. Mm-hmm. Although, did they ever find out if what happened to Dr. Quace, the
Well, Dr. Quace is still fine. Everybody is fine.
Okay.
He's still there. He's still probably waiting for her for breakfast. He's like, what happened?
He's like, God, you're like an hour late.
What's going on? Hope you have a good excuse.
Yeah.
About warp bubbles.
So, yeah, I guess my question is, how do you feel about this episode overall?
Oh, that was going to be my question for you.
Well, now I asked you, so.
You did. The tables. The warp bubbles have been turned. I think that this is one of those episodes that is fun to watch, but as you think about it, you think, it's kind of weird. and there are lots of unexplained things. And Wesley's involvement annoys me because I think that none of this should have happened.
Yeah, the whole premise is like, it shouldn't have happened.
They just needed to figure out a way to get her. Like, I like the idea of being in a collapsing kind of universe and trying to figure out how to get out. But I don't know. The idea that Wesley just kind of randomly did it doesn't make any sense. And Worf is mischaracterized as well, although he disappears. So.
Yeah, I guess that's... So there's a lot of... I realized after I watched it again that I actually hate this episode.
All right.
I mean, you know, I of course like the series and it plays into the whole series. But yeah, I don't know. There's a lot of things about this episode that are irritating to me. Mm-hmm. Like you said, the whole premise is kind of like... You know, it shouldn't have happened in the first place. It seems weird. They could have set it up differently, but fine, whatever, you know.
I think this episode would have been vastly improved if they had just changed the setup slightly. I still think it would have been problematic, but I think it would have been much improved.
Yeah, I think the premise could have been better. And then, you know, so I've been on this whole rant about, like, the whole time, you know, it's like this question, even after they kind of reveal that she's stuck in this sort of alternate world, even despite that, they sort of still play along this storyline that she, at least in her own head, might be crazy.
Might be crazy, yeah.
And so that kind of is irritating to me because, I don't know, they just use that as like a plot device. Like, is she crazy or not? Like almost the whole episode. And then, in the end, she still couldn't save herself. She had to rely on her, like, dumbass son to get her out of it. So, like,
it's true,
ultimately,
yeah.
She's helpless through the whole thing. And then her son, who got her into it, it kind of has to get her out. And then, oh, it's, like, so wonderful, you know, so thankful to Wesley.
Thank you, Wesley.
He's the one who you know, created this whole mess in the first place.
And I feel like Dr. Crusher is not afraid to share her opinion and dress down people. She's
right.
done it a lot, and she totally should have said, maybe give him a hug, but then right away push him away and say, you idiot.
I mean, seriously, I guess I just felt like this whole episode was just really kind of played around her just not kind of being a victim the whole way,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, in a weirdly irritating way, you know, like,
yeah,
not
totally
just, like, things happening, but, like, I don't know, things happening to her, and, like, all of us as the audience, and the crew members, like, questioning her sanity, and then her, you know, being saved, like, the damn princess in a castle, like, at the end. You know, I don't know. It was just kind of weird, like, the
That's
whole
true.
Thing. But
I think if it was Captain Picard who was stuck in that other thing, there would have been a whole lot less of, oh, am I crazy?
Yeah, right?
He would have been much more sure of himself, I think.
I agree.
Like Riker or someone else.
I agree. And I think, yeah, I agree with that. And I think also in the beginning, even though you're right, Worf wasn't in it for very long. But if it were Picard, I think Worf might have been maybe more alarmed by the fact that he didn't know what was going on. He'd be like, well, how did this happen? Like, you know, like we were saying earlier. Mm-hmm. Whereas in the beginning, he's just like, oh, well, I mean,
you probably didn't do the paperwork right.
Yeah, right. Silly woman. You probably didn't do it right.
Let's go clean up your mess.
Yeah.
It's not my fault.
I know. But, you know, I guess, you know, aside from all these details, I suppose the whole getting stuck in a, you know, this alternate universe thing is okay, I suppose. I don't know how, you know, overall it's fine. You know, all Next Generation episodes kind of have, like, a campy sort of storyline. So that mm-hmm. part of it, you know, is just kind of typical of Next Generation, I think. I think they just kind of were trying to find a way to set it up, and then they just picked something, and then
some nonsensical thing.
Yeah,
even within, I mean, so Star Trek is a nonsensical show.
Yes,
but
indeed.
The way that it works is that it is internally consistent, right? It has its own rules,
mm-hmm.
and this show, like the setup, just totally ignores any of the rules that you would think a large militarized organization like Starfleet would have.
Yeah.
To prevent things such as one of your crew members being sucked into an alternate reality.
I mean, can you just imagine, like, okay, I know that now we're talking about, like, a fantasy world in real life, but, like, can you just imagine if we had some kind of giant, like, you know, like you said, militarized kind of ship that's out there, and then it came out that, like, some basically intern-level, like, kid was, like, messing around with this major thing that could have exploded and, like, killed everybody. I mean, that would never be allowed. It would never be allowed today or, you know, hundreds of years in the future. It's
yeah.
crazy.
I mean, Captain Picard would lose his job. Most of the senior crew would be drummed out if
yeah.
it were ever to be found out.
The whole thing would be just turned upside down. But no, like, there's no...
It just ends with a hug.
Yeah, it just ends with a hug.
Well, so I think we both agree. Overall, not a good episode.
This episode sucks.
This episode is no good. It could have been good, but it wasn't.
It's kind of funny, I guess. Like, if for people who are listening, like, it's amusing because it's so ridiculous.
It's true.
But you know, it's a disappointing episode overall.
The beauty of this podcast, though, is the people who really like this podcast watch the episode before they listen to this podcast.
That's
so
true.
So they can come to their own opinions. So we really can't tell people not to watch it because most of them have probably already watched it. So
yeah.
Just apologize.
I mean,
so.
Go ahead and watch it, I guess.
Yeah, if after you listen to this episode and you think it sounds intriguing, you should watch it.
Yeah,
There are worse episodes of Star Trek: The Next Generation.
Oh, so. Man. Certainly. Especially anything with Q in it.
Oh, you're not a fan of Q.
No, I hate him.
Well, there you go. But at least they didn't have Q come to fix it, because he just would have...
He would have just definitely made it much worse.
He would have. But there probably would have been, like, a mariachi band or something involved, so that would have been amusing. Well, Jackie, thank you for joining me and watching this episode.
Well, thank you for having me. It was fun.
Next time on Random Trek, Season 1, Episode 5 of Voyager, Phase.